Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Cancer is a Racket when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then you pay a 17% income tax on that $50,000. That's another $8,500. That means that you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying a tax on a tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? If you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about Cancer is a Racket, and I showed you a parallel here from the book called War is a Racket by Smedley Butler. Remember, Butler now is a twice-decorated Congressional Medal of Honor winner, 31 years in the Marines, three-star general. Came back and said, I ain't nothing but, and this is his quote, he said, I spent 33 years in the Marines, most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism, unquote. Now, there's a connection between the medical community and government in the same way that there's a connection between the defense industry and government. And it's a symbiotic relationship. The one cannot get along without the other. Big business, the defense industry, demands, requires, has to have war in order to profit. And after all, when you're building F-14 Tomcats, the objective is war. That's the purpose behind it. When you're making powder, you know, gunpowder, the objective here is to sell more gunpowder. I mean, after all, how many deer are there out there to shoot? Now, after you've built this big factory or this big plant, like the DuPonts, as was pointed out by Mr. Butler, they were making $6 million a year in 1910. Then when World War I broke out, their profits went up to $56 million a year. All right. So you can see that war is immensely profitable for big business, for the military-industrial complex. Now, how about medicine? How about cancer? Again, we need more and more cancer because more and more cancer provides us with more and more dollars of revenue. There was a story in the Bible about a woman who had an issue of blood. Today we would call that leukemia. And she went to the physicians. She went to the medical doctors, just like people are doing today, and she spent all of her money. She didn't have national health care insurance. The Roman Empire evidently wasn't providing national health care insurance, and she ran out of money. And it just coincidentally, they ran out of treatments. And you'll notice that. When you run out of money, the doctor will run out of treatments. As long as you've got money, that doctor has no end to treatment. So in desperation, she went to Jesus, and she touched the hem of his garment, and she was healed of her infirmity. It was a natural healing. Now, let's talk about this for a minute. Did you notice that one of Jesus' top priorities was healing people all through the New Testament, particularly the Gospels? He's just out healing people all the time. He had lepers who were coming to him and people with all kinds of infirmities. One day there was a guy that was had a spinal injury or something, and he couldn't walk, and so they took the tile off the roof of the house and dropped him down on ropes right through the roof to get his attention. And, of course, he healed all these people. Did you notice what the reaction was from the government authorities when Jesus healed people? They were just livid. They were just mad as hornets. They were constantly deriding him. They were making fun of him, and they were threatening him, and they were seeking accusation against him constantly over taxes, over healing. Nothing's changed. It's the same thing today. Government is after you for taxes, and government is after you for unauthorized healing, and there's a reason for that. You're interfering with a monopoly. Now, the military-industrial complex has a monopoly that the average Joe Sixpack isn't going to get involved in. In other words, I can't go out and build a better airplane than the F-14 Tomcat. I can't make better plastic explosives than C-4, which is already being made by DuPont and other companies. And so, therefore, they've got a monopoly. But when it comes to healing, there are 14 cures to cancer. 14. Most of them are natural. I mean, hell, they've already been out there for hundreds and thousands of years, and people have known about them. and have made use of them. So I'm going to tell you what these 14 cancer cures are. And I'm going to show you why it is that government, like the case of Bruce Halstead that I mentioned to you last time, when he came to the realization that trying to find a cure to cancer in a test tube was futile, he said, look, there's a more logical way to treat cancer, and it works. And he was immediately jailed. And the reason for that was is because cancer is a copyrighted trademark. It's owned by, just like Coca-Cola is owned by, a corporation. So I cannot cure you of cancer. I cannot cure you of Hansen's disease. Now, to give you an illustration, Hansen's disease is known as leprosy. Leprosy is a generic name. If you came to me with leprosy, I could sit here and prescribe for you. I could say, well, here's what I think you ought to do for leprosy. That's why the name was changed from leprosy to Hansen's disease, because Hansen's disease can be copyrighted, it can be patented, it can be sold in the marketplace. It comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. Leprosy doesn't. Cancer is marketed every day. Cancer is a registered trade name. Cancer is owned by the American Medical Association. Now, if I say to you, here's what you need to do for your cancer, that's like me saying, here's the way to make Coca-Cola. I can make Gordon Cola. I can make Ozark Cola. I can make Cola, but I cannot make Coca-Cola. That's somebody else's property. It's against the law to do that. So when Halstead, who is a scientist, is out here prescribing cures to cancer that goes beyond the trademark or the copyright holder's instructions, he comes against him, and he has to have a power to do that. And so this is why it's so important that the medical industry has a symbiotic relationship with the government. This is why you doctors have to be licensed. This is why we have licensing. It has nothing to do with competence. Hell, you doctors out there are all incompetent. You're killing 130,000 people a year by iatrogenic purposes or iatrogenic disease, for crying out loud. Government isn't getting on your case for that. God help American Airlines if they killed 130,000 people a year. But you doctors have a license to kill. And so that's why you're licensed. Now, as a result of that license, which gives you immunity from prosecution for killing people, the government comes along and says, okay, well, we want something out of this too. See, we got to get paid for this. We will protect your medical monopoly. Now, you got to pay us these taxes. And so the doctor over here, he's paying taxes that he collects from his patients off of this copyrighted trade name called cancer, and it's a $500 billion a year business. And if the government's making 10%, the government gets $50 billion. And then you doctors and hospitals and all you medical professionals, you know, you oncologists and so on, you get $450 billion. Not bad. Now, the last thing we want to screw up our business is for some screwball to come along here like Ann Wigmore and develop wheatgrass as a cure for cancer. Now, we can't have that because wheatgrass doesn't cost anything. It isn't copyrightable. It isn't patentable, but it cures cancer. And that's number one on the list, Ann Wigmore. This woman discovered that there was something in, some nutritional factor that's in wheatgrass as opposed to other types of grass, and that by juicing wheatgrass and giving it to people, she had a clinic up in Boston, the cancer would go away. People had tumors, and people had cancer, they'd go to the Ann Wigmore clinic, and they'd eat this wheatgrass or drink this wheatgrass juice, and in about 6 weeks or 6 months, the cancer would go away, and that was the end of it. Didn't cost very much. Now, it costs $100,000 to die in 18 months with conventional medical treatment. And there's 500,000 people a year dying from cancer. Now, that isn't to say that the cancer doctors don't have a cure. They do. It's called cut, burn, and poison. And it works. The surgery works. There are cases where people have cancers and they go to the hospital and the doctor cuts the cancer out surgically. And the patient recovers and lives happily ever after. Okay, we recognize that. Now, there's a second factor here. It's called radiation. You can take a tumor and you can bombard it with radiation and it'll kill the tumor. And then your body will dispose of the parts and people survive from that. And that's a cure for cancer. And then there's chemotherapy. That's some kind of a drug combination that chemically kills the cancer. Now, there's a young fellow by the name of Lance Armstrong, and he's a bicycle rider. And he's won the Grand Prix, or the, what do they call it, bicycle race over in France, two or three times. And he's a pretty famous guy. Well, about 10 years ago, he had cancer. He went through the conventional medical treatment, cut, burn, and poison, and they cured the cancer. Now, he's a survivor for 9 years, and he's called a cancer survivor. So right here at the top of our list, we should put the medical establishment cures 37% of the cancers that are brought to them. And so they have a proven success record, and we ought to recognize it. And their number is 37%. Now, the problem with that is that 63% then die. And so what we should focus on is, what do we do with those 63%? That's the majority. That's two people out of every three. And so they can cure about one out of three, and then two out of three die. Now, what we'd like to do is to cure those other 63. And so the medical establishment says, well, give us more money. And Bruce Halstead, that I mentioned to you, is a cancer researcher, been working at it for many, many years. And he says, okay, well, I don't think we're going to find it here in the laboratory in the test tube. I think we're going to find it at Ann Wigmore's place with wheatgrass. I think we're going to find it with Laetrile. Now, I brought up this Laetrile to you a couple days ago, and pointed out two doctors, a father and son in San Francisco, California, 1949, 50, 51, went over to Nepal, found out that those people don't have cancer, and they came up with a product called Laetril. Laetril, that's vitamin B17, and you can get it in peach pits. And so the medical establishment outlawed peach pits. Hell, for years you couldn't buy peach pits or apricot pits anywhere. And if you got caught with Laetril, or if you were a doctor using Laetril, you'd be prosecuted and put in prison, just like this Bruce Halsted. Now, if the medical establishment were indeed serious about finding a cure to cancer, then they would take these 14 proven cancer cures that are already out there, and they would work hard to investigate, to experiment with them, to develop them. What the hell difference does it make to you whether you're cured by surgery, or by radiation, or by chemotherapy, or by wheatgrass, or raw juices, or Indian black salve, or ozone, or garlic, or Essiac? What difference does it make to you? You know, as a cancer patient. Well, the truth is, for a cancer patient, he doesn't care how he's cured, he just wants to be cured. But it makes a hell of a big difference to the allopathic medical doctor, because it has everything to do with the profit margin involved. You see, if we treat you with cut, burn, and poison, we make $100,000 per customer on average. If we treat you with wheatgrass, maybe we make $500. Maybe. Now, would you rather make $500 or would you rather make $100,000? You know, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out. Now, if you listen to the news very much every day, you hear a mixed message coming out of the world's medical community. On the one hand, each and every day brings something new that's bad for your health, whether it be the air we breathe, the water we drink, or the food that we eat. On the other hand, each and every day you hear encouraging news about people living longer and being healthier because of any number of new treatments for various diseases, all of which leaves most people in a complete quandary as to which to believe. Well, the answer is both and neither. And this is because some of the most important information is being left out. It's left out of the headlines in order not to create a panic or an impression that the medical community doesn't know what it's doing. So we need to cover what these health risks are and give you a better understanding that's being ignored by the mainstream press and the medical community. Now, since the mid-1970s, they've recorded about 30 new infectious diseases, almost all originating in Africa, such as dengue fever, Ebola, and hantavirus, as well as the return of malaria, cholera, and other age-old killers. And every hour, an estimated 1,500 people worldwide die from infectious diseases. Developing countries are the most affected. And though places like the U.S. are not immune, as evidenced by the fact that even after massive immunization efforts and a decades-long struggle to control it, there are more than 17,000 cases of TB reported in the United States in 1999. 17,000 cases. Did you think TB had been eradicated? Well, at one time we thought it was, back in the 1950s. By 1954, we thought, hell, we got antibiotics now. I think we got this thing whipped. Now we're finding out, now we got super strains of TB. Medical community doesn't know what the hell to do about it. And the conventional drugs aren't solving that problem. So they say, well, give us more money and we'll go out and research and find more. What do these people do with the billions of dollars worth of profits that they make off of the drugs that they've developed? Well, in many cases, they pay those billions of dollars right back out for wrongful death actions. And, you know, they find out that, hey, this drug over here killed a bunch of people, 50,000 or whatever. By the time they get through paying off all of those lawsuits over there, I imagine that's where a lot of their profit goes. Now, infectious diseases have been treated very effectively by antibiotics and by modern allopathic medical doctors, such as, not limited to, polio, tuberculosis, pneumonia. Now what we're finding, though, is that these degenerative diseases, you know, like heart attack and stroke and cancer and muscular dystrophy and a whole host and plethora of other diseases out here that, well, we never even heard and had a name for, autism and so on, are being caused and they're being treated and they're big money makers. AIDS is a big money maker. It costs $100,000 a year to treat somebody in the United States for AIDS. It only costs $8,000 a year worldwide. And in some places in Africa, where Jimmy Carter and George Bush and Bill Clinton and others, you know, big celebrities, ex-presidents, have been working on it, they can treat people for a year for $400 in Botswana. Well, now, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee. If you can treat a black man in Botswana for $400 a year, why can't you treat a white man in San Francisco, California for $400 a year? Huh? Well, that's because in Botswana, the guy got $100,000 a year, so you got a profit. But the profit's on $400, it's not on $100,000. And the guy in San Francisco, you know, he's got the $100,000, and so, you know, why not gaff him for the $100,000? Now, it's $8,000 worldwide. So, you know, in India, China, and other countries in the world, backward countries, but they got a little more money. Instead of $400, they charge him $8,000. Modern medicine charges what the traffic will bear. That's what the bottom line is. And in cancer, the market price for cancer is $100,000, and the market seems to bear up quite nicely under that price schedule. And government is a very vital, integral part to keep all of the non-union scabs out of the marketplace. Now, Ann Wigmore was a non-union scab, and she was curing people of cancer. And the authorities were on her ass constantly. And why were they doing that? Was it because she killed anybody? To my knowledge, Ann Wigmore's clinic, not a single person ever died there. Unlike modern allopathic medicine, where you go to the medical establishment, you go to the hospital, they kill 130,000 people a year, and you don't hear anything in the headlines about doctors and hospitals being prosecuted for wrongful death. That's because you've got the government licensing program, the symbiotic relationship. That's why all you doctors want licenses. Now, Ann Wigmore, she couldn't get a license because her therapy is unapproved. It's not approved by the FDA. Why isn't it approved? Why isn't it at least approved for experimental use? And here's another thing to keep in mind. In almost every one of these cases here, when you're talking about Ann Wigmore, the only people that ever went to Ann Wigmore were the people that were incurable and couldn't be cured by the conventional medical wizards. Because if they could be cured by cut, burn, and poison, they would have already been cured. So the only people that were going to these alternative clinics, the people who are going to Mexico for alternative cancer therapy, boys and girls, they've already exhausted all of their remedies with the medical doctors. That's where my wife was 30 years ago. You see, she was feeling bad one day, so she went to the doctor. And the doctor took some tests and came back and says, oh my God, you've got cancer. They took a look and they said, well, what are you going to do about it? And they said, well, it's inoperable and it's terminal and you're going to die. Now that's, you know, for a young woman 30 years ago, you know, my wife was in her 30s and she was devastated. She said, oh my God, I've got cancer, I'm 35 years old and I'm going to die. And so they said, well, now listen, we can treat your cancer and we can probably extend your life by about 18 months. They thought she was going to die in about 3 months. We can probably extend it for 18 months. Well, what's that going to cost, she asked, and they said, well, about $100,000. Prices have remained remarkably stable. From 1978 to 2008, it's still about $100,000. You know, it's not even adjusted for inflation. Just, you know, inflation has gone up. So actually, if you stop and think about the price, the cost of cancer treatment's actually gone down from what it was in 1978 through conventional medical practice. So they said, well, that's our offer. And so she said, well, thank you, but no thank you. If I was going to take the $100,000, I suppose I ought to leave it to my family. Why spend $100,000 and then die? If I'm going to die anyway, what difference does it make if I die in 3 months or 18 months? I'm just as dead. And my family could probably use the $100,000 after I'm gone a whole lot better than you medical doctors could. So she went on back home getting ready to die. Meanwhile, she got to thinking to herself, well, what did people do 1,000 years ago if they had this tumor, this cancer, they're feeling this way? What could I do? What caused this cancer? The medical society said, well, we don't know what causes it, and we don't know how to cure it. Now, I mentioned this to you yesterday. Listen to this. You got a car and it ain't running right. You take it into the mechanic. And he says to you, I don't know what's wrong with your car, and I cannot fix it. But I've got lots of time on my hands, and I'll work on it. And I'll charge you $25 an hour to work on your car. And if I fix it, great. And if I don't fix it, that's great too, because I'm getting paid anyway. Would you take your car to a mechanic that says to you plainly, I don't know what's wrong with your car, and I don't know how to fix it? Would you pay him $25 an hour to experiment? Because that's precisely what you're doing with the medical profession. You walk in, you say, I'm not feeling good. The doctor looks at you and says, you've got cancer. We can tell you that much. You've got cancer. Do you know what causes it, doc? No. Do you know how to cure it? No. But for $100,000, we'll treat you until you die. And you people line up for that kind of program. Line up. The cancer clinics are full. Now, 500,000 of you are going to die this year from cancer. A symbiotic relationship between the FDA, government licensing, and the American Medical Association. And throw in the Cancer Society and John Hopkins and a whole host and plethora of other smaller players in the game. And that's the cancer industry. And it's a big business. It makes a lot of money. Now, for practical purposes, though, what are we going to do down here at the bottom line? So let's take a look at 14 cancer cures. Did you know that juice and raw food will cure cancer? Did you know that cancer is called the cooked food disease? People who eat raw foods don't get cancer. People that eat cooked foods do. And if you want to check this out, listen to this. It's called Pottinger's cats. Back in the 1920s, a fellow by the name of Pottinger down in Southern California, he got to looking at the cats around his clinic, and he noticed that these cats were pretty healthy. And they were just eating garbage. You know, they're just eating out of the garbage cans and one thing and another. And so he took some of those cats and he locked them up. And all he gave them was cooked food. And they got sick eating cooked food. And in four generations, they became infertile. They were sterile in four generations, cats. Now, Pottinger wrote this all down, and he said, wow, this is pretty informative. I wonder what happens when we just feed cooked food to humans. They get sick. And in societies where people eat a lot of raw food, they have good teeth. They don't have their teeth rotten out. Now, when you give them a Western diet, then their teeth rot out, and they get cancer, and they get sick like everybody else. So what the white man has found is that where he travels around the world, and people are eating natural diets around them, Polynesians in the South Sea Islands, Hunza's eating up in the Himalaya Mountains, natives eating in the Amazon Basin. They don't have any tooth decay. Now, as soon as you introduce a Western diet, you give them ho-hos, ding-dongs, and Twinkies, these people get tooth decay, they get cancer, and they die. All right, so if you want to check this out, you go to the Weston A. Price website, Weston, W-E-S-T-O-N, A. Price Foundation is what it's called. and take a look for yourself. And this is what Ann Wigmore discovered. So she would put people on a raw diet, give them wheatgrass, and their cancer would go away. She was not a scientist. She didn't know what the hell she was doing. She didn't know what the hell causes the cancer. She didn't know what the cure was. But she did know this, that if you take these people off of cooked foods, put them on wheatgrass and juice and raw foods, the cancer goes away. And that's what these two doctors found in San Francisco with Laetrile. They found out that if you take these people up and you just leave their diet alone, they never got into diet, just give these people vitamin B17, the cancer would go away. Which is, you know, as far as us mechanics and plumbers are concerned, that's all we're really concerned about, isn't it? I mean, I really don't care about the genomes and the genes and gene splicing and all of this. I'm not interested in that. I'd be just as happy if the doctor could give me a prescription and I went to the druggist and got it filled and went home, took two tablets and went to bed and the cancer went away. I'd be just as happy. I couldn't care less. Now, if you want to go the conventional route, the problem that you have with the surgery is this. By the time they cut your breasts off, ladies, they also cut out your lymph nodes. And your lymph system is a part of your body's immune system. Now, here's the downside. If you destroy your immune system, then there isn't much we can do for you with alternative cancer therapy, because your alternative cancer therapy is dependent upon your immune system to cure you. See, when God created you, as opposed to you evolved from the Big Bang, when God, the creator, the master engineer and designer of the human body, designed you, he put in a system that's called the immune system. Very complicated system, and it's made up of the lymph and thyroid, appendix, tonsils, adenoids. There's a number of parts in your body that are immune system parts, and your body needs these to fight off and to destroy the cancer. If you feed your immune system with vitamins and minerals, and here's a guy that comes along, his name is Joel Wallach. Remember I mentioned him to you last time. And he wrote a book called Rare Earths, and it's called Vitamin and Mineral Therapy. If you take all of the vitamins and minerals and the 16 amino acids that your body needs, the cancer will go away. So now we've covered four. The Ann Wigmore wheatgrass, the vitamin mineral therapy, rare earths, Joel Wallach, I mentioned that to you the other day, Laetrile, that's vitamin B17, and then the conventional cut, burn and poison. Now that's four cancer cures out of 14, which makes me ask the question, why in the hell do we need to march on cancer? Why do we need to spend billions of dollars of taxpayer money looking for cancer cures? Hell, there's four right there, and three of them we're not using. Wheatgrass, vitamin and mineral therapy, and Laetrile. In fact, the vitamin and mineral therapy is being laughed at, hooted, jeered, and ridiculed by the medical profession, and Laetrile is being outlawed and people put in jail for using it or prescribing it. And the people that are prescribing it, like medical doctors, lose their licenses. Now, why is it that we're defrocking, delicensing doctors for using Laetrile, especially on cancer patients that cut, burn, and poison will not work on? You know, there comes a point in time when the doctor says there's nothing more we can do. Okay, at that point in time when cut, burn, and poison does not work, why would the American Medical Association, the Cancer Society, and the FDA have any objections to eating wheatgrass or a juice and raw food diet or vitamins and minerals? What the hell difference does it make? Well, here's what the difference is. If, in fact, the wheatgrass, the juice and raw food diet, the vitamins and minerals, if, in fact, it worked, then it would be a competitive factor to the cut, burn, and poison, which we already know makes $100,000 a year. Boys and girls, juice and raw foods don't cost $100,000. And it's effective and it cures cancer. How do you like that? I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by simply asking for it. Just call us and say, hey, I want that CD package. Number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the law or an editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the law or an editorial review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about cancer is a racket. Now, the mafia operates a racket. You know, they come along and they call it a shakedown racket. And they come along, they knock on your door, they just walk into your store in New York and they say, hey, you need insurance. And you're a store owner and you say, well, I don't think I need any more insurance, I've got insurance. And the guy says, oh no, you need our special insurance. I'll be by every Wednesday to pick up $100. $100 a week, it's $5,200 a year. We got the best insurance that money can buy. It will guarantee that your store will not burn down. And then you sit there and say, well, wait a minute, I'm not concerned about my store burning down. I have Mutual of Omaha. And he says, oh, no, you don't understand. See, up the street, the guy's store burned down. He didn't have insurance. And I'm sitting here telling you that if you don't have insurance, then your store's going to burn down. Or you may have some hoodlums beat you up in the alley or something like that might happen. And if you pay $100 a week insurance, you will not have any hoodlums beating you up in the alley and you won't have your store burned down. Now, if you buy the insurance, you can rest assured that your store will not burn down and that you will not be victimized by hooligans in the alley. But if you don't pay the $100, you can be assured that you will. So, now, we call that distraint. We call that criminal. Okay, well, we have a similar circumstance operating here with the military-industrial complex. They're extorting money from us also, but they have a little different program. The medical establishment, they're extorting money from us also, but they got a little different program. They're not quite as direct as the mafia guy. But it is effective. And they use fear. Fear is a very powerful motivator. And then they use education. That's another very effective tool. So government comes along and educates you to believe that the medical profession has all the medical answers, when in fact, all you have to do is ask the doctor and he'll say, well, no, we don't know what causes autism, and we don't know how to cure it, but we have a treatment for it. No, we don't know what causes Alzheimer's disease, and we don't know how to cure it, but we have a treatment for it. No, we don't know what causes cancer, and we don't know how to cure it, but we have a treatment for it. Now, if anybody else comes along and says autism is caused by thimerosal in the vaccines, the medical establishment, they jump all over that, and the government jumps all over that, and they say, no, there's no evidence of that. We don't know that's true. And then they obfuscate it, and then they teach you in school that these are a bunch of right-wing radical kooks. Now, I'm going to bring this to your attention again. I've done this a time or two. Listen, the word autism did not occur until 1943. I forgot the guy's name now. His name wasn't Joe Autism, but, you know, it was some doctor, and he came along, and that's some kind of a Latin name for a symptom, you know, when these children, they end up with autism. This autism doesn't affect adults. It affects children. 1943. This doctor is looking at children. There's about one in 100,000 or something like that, that has this thing, and they came up and they said, wow, this is kind of unusual. I called it autism. By 1950, this thing was attacking about one person, one child, and about 10,000. Or maybe it was 1970. I've forgotten the exact date, but, you know, it moved up from 100,000 to, you know, by 10 times over a period of about 20 years or 30 years. Now it's one in 10,000. Still, you know, it's not very common, but, you know, it's there. Today, autism affects one child out of 68. Now, it went from one in 100,000 to one in 10,000 to one in 68. So it's getting worse. It's getting worse. Now, in 1900, we didn't have any autism. None. Zero zilch. Today, we got one in 68 with autism. So, you know, somebody ought to come along and say, well, what's doing that? What is it that we Americans have done over the last 100 years that we were not doing prior to that? And the answer to that is vaccinations. Vaccinations. Now, compulsory vaccination started in this country in 1933 in the public schools. And they had two shots. Two. All right, now these two shots had thimerosal now. And by 1943, there were some people, about one in 100,000, that would develop symptoms called autism or autistic. By 1950, it was one in 10,000. And we had added a few more shots. Today, we are now vaccinating little children aged 2 months to 5 years with 35 shots. Now, not all of the shots have thimerosal in them, that's true, but 24 of them do. So 24 shots out of 35 have thimerosal. Now, over the next 20 years, they're proposing that you give your child 50 shots, 50. They're going to move that up 15 from 35 to 50 over the next 20 years. That's what they're proposing. Now, watch what I'm going to predict. As you give more of these vaccines to more and more children, you're going to have from 1 in 68 to 1 in 10 or something on that order. And the medical community, that's the allopathic medical doctors, will say there's no empirical evidence, there's no studies, there's no proof that thimerosal. And by that time, they'll say, well, we took the thimerosal out of the vaccine. Okay. Well, then that tells you that it's a combination of thimerosal in the vaccine and the vaccine itself. Or if it's not the thimerosal, then it's just the vaccines. But whatever it is, there is a corresponding link between the vaccinations and the autism. I mean, hell, everybody can see that. But nobody wants to admit it, because to admit that would admit to billions of dollars worth of liability. And this is why Dick Armey put a rider on a bill in 2002 that exempts, get this, exempts the pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits. So you cannot sue Pfizer or Merck or anybody else for your child developing autism, even if it could be proved that the thimerosal did it and that the pharmaceutical company knew that it was doing it. Just like the tobacco industry, remember, they denied that nicotine was addictive and denied that there was any connecting or causal link between cancer and smoking. Now they admitted it, and they made a big deal out of it, and they made a big settlement. But hell, they lied to us for 40 years, didn't they? Okay, well, the medical association, they're all lying to us also. And one of these days, the truth will come out, but it won't do anything for your autistic kid. It's not going to do anything for you after you die from cancer. All right, now, getting back here to the point, juice and raw food diet. That's another one over here. You can just go on juice and raw food. That's what my wife did in 1978. She was so sick, she could not digest protein, so she was limited to 6 almonds a day. That's all the protein her body could handle. She was about as close to dying as you can get, and they built a greenhouse out here, and she started eating wheatgrass. She got on juice. That's the only food she could get, so she was drinking carrot juice and raw foods, you know, 6 almonds a day and so on. Now, there's another little thingy over here called bloodroot. Now, bloodroot is an herb, and there's a plant called the bloodroot plant. And there's a product called Cansema, and it's called the Indian black salve. The active ingredient is called bloodroot. When you put bloodroot on a tumor, an external tumor, let's just say you got a lump on your body. See, cancer doesn't always manifest itself with a lump someplace. If it's inside, you know, colon cancer, hell, you don't know you've got that, or liver cancer. If it's in your internal organs, you got cancer, it's a tumor, but you don't know you've got it. But now, a lot of times, you'll develop a tumor. Skin cancer is an external tumor. And you put this bloodroot on it. If it's cancer, it will eat it out. It will dissolve it, and it will turn it into a putrid mass. In the Bible, it's called a running issue. You'll see this in Leviticus 13, 14, 15, along there. It's called a running issue. Been around for a long time. And it's brought to a head by this thing called bloodroot. Now, if in fact this is a lump, but it's not malignant, it's not cancer, the bloodroot won't do anything to it. I've tested it personally. I've put it on skin cancers and just eats them out. I've put it on things that I thought was a skin cancer and didn't do anything to it. See? So that means that you may have a growth growing here. I got one on my finger here, and I've put bloodroot on it 4 or 5 times, and nothing happens. I think it's probably just a wart. Now, another one here on my arm, and I put it on there, and it ate it out. Now, this is called Indian black salve. This bloodroot is also the active ingredient in Essiac. And that's quite a little story, this Essiac. There was a nurse up in Canada. Her name was Renee Cassick, a French woman. And she just a nurse, just working in the hospital, doing her thing. And there's a lady came in, and this lady had a scar on her breast. And the nurse, when she saw that, she said, oh, what happened to your breast? You got the scar on. And she said, well, I had cancer in my breast. And I went to an Indian, and this Indian suggested that I use this bloodroot formula. And I used that bloodroot formula on my breast, and it ate the cancer out, and that's the results of it. And Renee Cassie was just flabbergasted. And she said, well, would you get me the ingredients for this? And the lady said, well, you know, I don't know if I can or not, but I'll go back to this Indian and see if I can. And she did. So the formula for the Essiac that we talk about today was discovered by the Indians up in Ontario, Canada. So this isn't something that came from the American Medical Association or from the test tubes and the laboratories of John Hopkins University. Just a bunch of Indians. And they'd known about this for hundreds and maybe thousands of years. And they've been curing cancer with it for years and years. You know, people have had cancer for years and years. Cancer was a part and parcel of the creation. It's created by God himself. It's a part and parcel of the creation week. It's a natural bodily function and process. We all have cancer cells in our bodies. And if our immune systems are working correctly, it takes care of it automatically and naturally. You don't need to worry about it at all. Now, if for some reason your body gets out of balance, your immune system doesn't keep the cancer under control, you start developing these tumors, and these tumors grow and grow until finally they'll kill you. So the doctor, he looks at that and he says, oh, we've got to cut that tumor out. And then he's got a good point there. But when you're cutting the tumor out, what you're doing is treating the symptom rather than the cause. What caused that symptom? Well, it was a lack of laetrile, the lack of vitamin B17, remember? So you weren't getting enough nuts, or you were eating too many cooked nuts, cooked food. That's what cancer is called, a cooked food disease. Anyway, Renee Cassie gets this formula, and she starts testing it on people that have incurable cancer, and it cures them. She develops, this is back in World War I days, and so she goes to the medical association and says, hey, look, try this. And they did. In 1937, the parliament in Canada voted on it, and they voted it down and outlawed it. Now, here's a cancer remedy that the Indians have had for hundreds and maybe thousands of years, outlawed by the Canadian Parliament in 1937, and Rene Cassie was threatened with jail. You go out here and treat any more people with this stuff over here because it's unapproved, and we're going to put you in jail. So she came to the United States, and she went to John F. Kennedy's personal doctor. That's right, John F. Kennedy, President of the United States, 1963. She went to his personal doctor and said, try this. And the personal doctor did try it, and it worked. He couldn't get it approved in the United States. He couldn't get it through the FDA. It's available out there in the underground market. It's called Essiac. Works like a shot. Cures cancer. Always has. Still does. But the commercial variety does not have the bloodroot in it. Bloodroot is the active ingredient. So when you're buying Essiac, it comes out of Germany. You're buying the Essiac, which is the detoxification formula. See, Essiac went a step further than the Indian Black Salve. The Indian Black Salve kills the external tumor, but it turns it into a putrid mass. It's just rotten flesh. It's necrotic flesh. It stinks. It smells bad. If you've ever smelled cancer, you'll know. You'll never forget that smell. Now, here's why the doctor keeps telling you that you need to catch this cancer early. And they're not lying to you. They've got a good point. See, if you've got a tumor, let's say it's in your liver, anywhere in your body, but, you know, in your liver, and they kill it with chelation, now your body has to dispose of all of that necrotic flesh. And, you know, sometimes these tumors are as big as a baseball. And it overwhelms your liver, your kidneys, and your colon, and you cannot dispose of all of this necrotic flesh, and so you die from organ failure, liver failure, something like that. So the doctor isn't lying to you. He can kill the cancer. But your body cannot dispose of the necrotic flesh, the dead cancer cells. It overwhelms your body. So the allopathic medical doctor says, well, the only solution to this is to catch this cancer early. We need to have early detection so that when we kill this cancer, your body can dispose of a little bit of necrotic flesh, but not a whole bunch. And they're right, and that's why their success rate is down at 37%, because they got to catch this cancer early. But what do you do if you didn't know you had cancer? See, my wife had cancer, but she's 35 years old, and it's in her reproductive organs and in her liver, and it's as big as a baseball, and, you know, the doctor says it's inoperable, it's metastasized, it's spread through your body, and there's nothing we can do. Well, allopathic medicine cannot deal with a cancer like that. Your immune system can, and if it gets the help it needs. Now, the reason your immune system let this cancer get out of control to start with is because you didn't have enough of B17. So we're going to start giving you B17, but we can't kill all of this cancer all at the same time, because if we do, it'll kill you. We have to kill it just a little bit at a time. And that's the Essiac formula, as opposed to the Indian Black Salve, which just kills the damn tumor, period. On the external, it's okay, because you see the necrotic flesh is sloughing off of your body externally. It's not going through your liver. It's not going through your kidneys. It's not a burden on your body. You don't have to detoxify. But if it's an internal cancer, your body has to dispose of all of that necrotic flesh. That means you cannot kill it all at the same time. So the bloodroot taken internally in the Essiac formula, just a little bit at a time, kills the tumors just a little bit at a time, and it makes you sick. So when you're taking Essiac, you're going to feel worse. I mean, if you're sick and you've got cancer, when you take Essiac, you're going to get sicker. Why? Well, because now we're disposing of the necrotic flesh. So many lay people, as soon as they get on Essiac, they say, oh, my God, I can't stand this, and so they quit. Well, okay. Now the cancer is going to kill you. Or you got to stick with the program, and you got to go through the Essiac program, and your body goes through what they call a healing crisis. And so, you know, you're going to get sicker before you get weller, bottom line. That's the way that game's played. Now, there's another thing over here discovered by a guy, I think I can cover one more here, by Max Gerson. It's called the coffee enema. Max Gerson discovered that when you have liver cancer, if you complement your juice and raw food diet, or your wheatgrass, if you complement that with coffee enemas, that it will stimulate your liver to dispose of more of the necrotic flesh. See, your liver, in the final analysis, has to take all of this dead cells from these cancers, goes through your bloodstream, and it's filtered through your liver. Now your liver bogs down. He discovered that coffee, directly taken through your colon in a coffee enema, would stimulate your liver so that it could dispose of more of the necrotic flesh faster. Now that's a huge breakthrough. Now, while oven by itself, the coffee enema doesn't kill the cancer or cure the cancer, it is an absolute essential to disposing of the waste material, because most people, you know, the cut-burning people, cut-burning poison people, that's the allopathic medical doctor, he can kill the cancer. We're not denying that. Hell, that radiation, it's going to destroy that tumor. Now your body has the problem of, well, what are we going to do with this baseball or golf ball-sized tumor? How are we going to dispose of it? If it's on the outside, you can cut it out surgically. And sometimes they can cut them out surgically on the inside, you know, if it isn't too bad. Sometimes with colon cancer, they'll just cut off a few feet of your colon, you know, and tie it back together. I mean, there's things that can be done, and the medical doctors are doing that. And like I said, 37% of the time they're successful, but 63% of the time they're not. And here's where these alternative cancer cures come in, because the alternative cancer treatment over here can save your life if you're one of the 63%. Now, the downside to that, and remember this, and think about this, if you go to the medical doctor first and you cut your breasts off and cut your lymph system out, your immune system shot, and from now on, it's just, you know, too bad for you. If, on the other hand, they take a tumor and they isolate it and they zap it with radiation, and it doesn't kill it and it metastasizes, it goes through your body, and the doctor says, well, you're going to die, so nothing more I can do to you. I get your 100,000 and that's the end of it. You're not done yet, see, because your immune system's still intact. Now you can go to the wheatgrass, raw food and juice diet, Laetril, and you can probably survive it. But if the medical profession, this often happens with surgery, they impair your immune system, well, then there's not much can be done for you. You can just pack her away, put your head between your knees, and kiss her goodbye. So tuck that away in your heart. If your doctor wants to cut out your lymph system and cut out your appendix and your impair your immune system, you might want to think about that, because once your immune system's been impaired, natural healing won't work, because natural healing depends upon your immune system to cure the cancer. This is the way life is. So if you've been through cut, burn, and poison and your immune system's still intact, we can still save you. In fact, one old Indian doctor down in Houston told me, he said, if I get a cancer patient in here whose body energy is still operating at 15%, I can save him. If it goes below 15%, I'm not, nothing I can do for him. Because there's a limit. My wife was right at that limit. See, her body energy was down around 15%. She could only eat 6 almonds a day. She could not digest protein. She couldn't digest meat at all. And eating meat now takes 75% of your body energy. 75%. That's why you need to get off meat right away when you got cancer. You get off meat and you get onto vegetables and fruits and you get onto raw foods. And now your body doesn't need that 75% to digest, and your body's 75% of its energy can be used then to fight the cancer. And that's the rationale behind it. Hey, I'm running out of time here again, kids. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and over the world, around the world, in 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.